40 solar panels line the top of David Rifkind's home in South Miami. His roof is angled perfectly to capture the most direct sun, but it helps with other things too.
In our case, it's mostly peacock poop that we have to wash off with the rainwater.
To understand Amendment 1, we have to go over a few basics of how solar panels like Rifkind's work. First, most people who have solar panels still need to get some of their power from utilities. They're still connected to the grid. The second thing you have to understand is what's called net metering. It's called that because there is a special kind of electrical meter involved. Rifkind's is attached to his garage, keeping track of what his solar panels produce and what he gets from Florida Power and Light.
There's the Dell number and then there's the receive number. So deliver is actually what they send to us and receive is what they get back from us.
During the day, the solar panels often produce so much electricity, his family can't use it all. So it gets pushed onto the grid. He gets credited for that on his meter. His neighbor might use some of the electricity or someone a few houses down. But then the clouds roll in or the sun goes down, and the solar panels don't produce electricity. To keep the AC and fridge on, his house pulls electricity from the grid. And you can watch the meter go back and forth, pulling and pushing electricity.
Oh, and now it just shifted. So now we're just receiving a little bit more from them. You know why? Because it just got shady all of a sudden, that's why.
And this back and forth has financial implications.
The amount of electricity we do not have to purchase from the utility every year is equal to about 8% of the installed price of the solar panels.
So his investments in the panels will pay for itself in about 12 years. That's assuming the value of the solar power he contributes to the grid and the cost to be connected to the grid stay the same. Opponents of Amendment 1 are afraid those things could change if it passes. So what Amendment 1 actually says is that consumers who don't have solar panels won't be forced to subsidize the cost of the grid for those who do. To Screven Watson, that's just a logical protection. He's with Consumers for Smart Solar, which is behind the amendment. He says people who don't use solar shouldn't have to pay more for the upkeep of the grid.
The cost to do the maintenance, to do the repairs in storms, is all sort of, if you will, baked into our electric bill. But if all of a sudden everybody had solar didn't have to pay, you know, people who don't choose solar's rates are going to go up.
He says he wants more solar in the state, but not on the backs of people who can't afford it. But on the other side, people like Stephen Smith with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy say this amendment is just the utility companies pushing back on consumers who are reducing their dependency on utilities.
If you go in your home and you put in a more efficient refrigerator, a new LED light bulb, you're going to use less power. Now, does the utility have a right to say that you've got to continue to pay them even though you're not using as much? I don't think so.
The fact is, the amendment isn't specific about how people who use solar would have to help pay for the upkeep of the grid. Smith is worried there could be a fee for people like Rifkind to connect to the grid, or that the rate he gets paid to contribute energy might go down. And that could make solar less attractive to individuals and leave it in the hands of utility-built solar farms. Utilities are the main financial backers of the amendment. Supporter Screven Watson says that concern is unfounded.
I can't imagine a scenario where a cost like this would ever be prohibitive. I really don't.
To make the amendment stick, 60% of voters will need to cast their ballots in support of it in November. I'm Wilson Sayre in Miami.